Državni ispitni center.
Maturità generale 2009.
Prova d'ascolto.
A tutti voi un cordiale saluto. Siamo all'inizio della prova d'ascolto d'inglese.
Questa prova d'esame si compone di due parti, la parte A e la parte B. Per ciascuna parte ascolterete un testo e risponderete poi ad un esercizio che a esso si ricollega. Dapprima leggerete l'esercizio, poi ascolterete ciascun testo per due volte. Potrete cominciare a risolvere l'esercizio già durante l'ascolto. L'inizio e la fine del testo saranno indicati dal seguente segnale acustico.
Scrivete le vostre risposte negli spazi appositamente previsti all'interno della prova, utilizzando la penna stilografica o la penna sfera. Scrivete in modo leggibile. In caso di errore, tracciate un segno sulla risposta scorretta e scrivete accanto ad essa quella corretta. Alle risposte e alle correzioni scritte in modo illeggibile verrà assegnato il punteggio di 0.
Dopo aver completato la risoluzione di ambedue le parti A e B della prova, avrete a disposizione ancora un minuto per compilare il foglio per le risposte per quanto riguarda l'esercizio A. Ricordatevi di indicare solamente una scelta per ciascuna affermazione dell'esercizio. In presenza di più scelte, infatti, alla vostra risposta verrà assegnato il punteggio di 0.
Abbiate fiducia in voi stessi e nelle vostre capacità. Vi auguriamo buon lavoro.
Ascoltate con attenzione. Aprite la prova d'esame.
Section A. You're going to hear how the British National Cycle Network influences the wildlife. As you listen to the recording, tick the appropriate column below, then complete the answer sheet according to the instructions on it. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the statements.
And it's not just school children who are benefiting from cycle paths. I went to find Michael Woods, chairman of the Mammal Society, on a muddy track near Cheddar in Somerset.
Well, I'm slopping along here in the mud. It's bucketing down with rain. And we're heading towards the Winscombe Tunnel here. Michael, what role is there for a biologist in the development and realisation of cycle paths?
Well, they make really good wildlife corridors. And these days, wildlife corridors are incredibly important. The countryside is getting increasingly fragmented with roads and sort of things like the loss of hedges. We've lost an enormous number of hedges in the last 20 or 30 years. And so a corridor like this, which enables wildlife of all sorts to travel along it, is really, really important because it links up different habitats.
But we've got bridleways and footpaths, and how do cycle paths differ in that respect?
Well, to start with, bridleways and footpaths aren't managed in the same way because the ownership belongs to the landowner rather than to an organisation such as Sustrans or the local authority that's seeking to manage the size of the paths for wildlife. But the other really important thing is that paths like this actually keep people on the path. They stay on a predictable route. And from a wildlife point of view, that's incredibly important. There's been some work done recently in the Peak District on birds, and they found that when the Pennine Way wasn't surfaced, then the birds, these were golden plover when they had chicks, would keep more than 200 metres away from the path. Once the path was surfaced and everyone stuck to it, 96% of the people walking along it stuck to the path, then they came to within 50 metres.
Is that because of the predictability of behaviour?
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, my initial instinct was, OK, yes, I can go along with the access, yes, easy for wheelchairs and much more encouraging for people to be walking along, mothers and children, but a big swathe of pathway is actually contradictory to a wildlife area, isn't it? But from what you're saying, it actually has a different effect.
It does. And we're in, talking about 2 metres, 3 metres wide at the very most. But it's the sides that are so important. One of the things that we try to retain all the way down the sides is some form of arboreal connection, hedgerows and trees. And this particular route that we're on at the moment actually has dormice living in the hedges, because these are small animals that don't come down to the ground. So arboreal connections are very, very important for them. And then bigger mammals, such as foxes, badgers, deer, they can use disused railway lines and other sustrans paths to cross roads, because there are always bridges either under or over roads to enable them to cross safely. And then as we come up to this tunnel...
Yes, this is quite a long tunnel. This is an old railway tunnel, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Now you will hear the recording again.
And it's not just school children who are benefiting from cycle paths. I went to find Michael Woods, chairman of the Mammal Society, on a muddy track near Cheddar in Somerset.
Well, I'm slopping along here in the mud. It's bucketing down with rain. And we're heading towards the Winscombe Tunnel here. Michael, what role is there for a biologist in the development and realisation of cycle paths?
Well, they make really good wildlife corridors. And these days, wildlife corridors are incredibly important. The countryside is getting increasingly fragmented with roads and sort of things like the loss of hedges. We've lost enormous number of hedges in the last 20 or 30 years. And so a corridor like this, which enables wildlife of all sorts to travel along it, is really, really important because it links up different habitats.
But we've got bridleways and footpaths, and how do cycle paths differ in that respect?
Well, to start with, bridleways and footpaths aren't managed in the same way because the ownership belongs to the landowner rather than to an organisation such as Sustrans or the local authority that's seeking to manage the sides of the paths for wildlife. But the other really important thing is that paths like this actually keep people on the path. They stay on a predictable route. And from a wildlife point of view, that's incredibly important. There's been some work done recently in the Peak District on birds, and they found that when the Pennine Way wasn't surfaced, then the birds, these were golden plover when they had chicks, would keep more than 200 metres away from the path. Once the path was surfaced and everyone stuck to it, 96% of the people walking along it stuck to the path, then they came to within 50 metres.
Is that because of the predictability of behaviour?
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, my initial instinct was, OK, yes, I can go along with the access, yes, easy for wheelchairs and much more encouraging for people to be walking along, mothers and children, but a big swathe of pathway is actually contradictory to a wildlife area, isn't it? But from what you're saying, it actually has a different effect.
It does. And we're in, talking about 2 metres, 3 metres wide at the very most, but it's the sides that are so important. One of the things that we try to retain all the way down the sides is some form of arboreal connection, hedgerows and trees. And this particular route that we're on at the moment actually has dormice living in the hedges, because these are small animals that don't come down to the ground, so arboreal connections are very, very important for them. And then bigger mammals, such as foxes, badgers, deer, they can use disused railway lines and other sustrans paths to cross roads, because there are always bridges either under or over roads to enable them to cross safely. And then as we come up to this tunnel...
Yes, this is quite a long tunnel. This is an old railway tunnel, isn't it?
It is, yes.
This is the end of Section A. Section B. You're going to hear a program about Cuban crocodiles. As you listen to the recording, write your answers in note form in the spaces below. You will hear the recording twice. Now read through the questions.
Perhaps no other animal on Earth has generated as many myths and misconceptions. Crocodiles are the dragons of medieval legend. And ever since the first Europeans ventured into the tropics, horror stories have abounded and persisted to this day. They're the top predator in the tropical swamps and estuaries of the world. They've seen the dinosaurs come and go, and yet they still hold onto their niche. No animal has ever got the better of them. They're reptiles, a radical change in animal design from the amphibians that went before. They developed a thick, scaly, waterproof skin that lets them colonize land. They breathe through lungs, and their teeth sit in sockets. All the better for keeping your belly full. And yet even today, crocodiles survive almost unchanged. Bill McMahon is curator of ectotherms at Louisville Zoo in Kentucky, a state better known for hot-blooded racehorses than cold-blooded crocodiles. But these captive animals are quite special and rather rare.
This is a Cuban crocodile. They have the smallest geographic distribution of any living crocodilian. There are about 23 different living species of crocodilians in the world today. At one time during the Mesozoic and even earlier in the Cenozoic, crocodilians were much more widespread. But at the present time, there are only 23, and this one has by far the smallest geographic distribution. It's approximately 400 square kilometers.
And this is the animal's home and native land, one of only two small remote swamps in Cuba, which Bill and Cuban biologists are fighting to conserve. If the Cuban crocodile is to survive, the swamp needs kid glove treatment. The Cuban crocodile is a very distinctive animal. It grows up to 12 feet long, it's more heavily armored than most species, and you don't get too close because these little tootsies will propel its 150 pounds of flesh and teeth 5 feet up into the air. During the world's great ice ages, sea levels were lower and the Cuban crocodile had a much bigger habitat. But now their restricted range could easily be wiped out. And there's still illegal hunting to worry about. As a student, Bill had read one expert's view that the Cuban crocodile was already extinct, almost entirely as a result of hunting for their skins.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Perhaps no other animal on Earth has generated as many myths and misconceptions. Crocodiles are the dragons of medieval legend. And ever since the first Europeans ventured into the tropics, horror stories have abounded and persisted to this day. They're the top predator in the tropical swamps and estuaries of the world. They've seen the dinosaurs come and go, and yet they still hold onto their niche. No animal has ever got the better of them. They're reptiles, a radical change in animal design from the amphibians that went before. They developed a thick, scaly, waterproof skin that lets them colonize land. They breathe through lungs, and their teeth sit in sockets. All the better for keeping your belly full. And yet even today, crocodiles survive almost unchanged. Bill McMahon is curator of ectotherms at Louisville Zoo in Kentucky, a state better known for hot-blooded racehorses than cold-blooded crocodiles. But these captive animals are quite special and rather rare.
This is a Cuban crocodile. They have the smallest geographic distribution of any living crocodilian. There are about 23 different living species of crocodilians in the world today. At one time during the Mesozoic and even earlier in the Cenozoic, crocodilians were much more widespread. But at the present time, there are only 23, and this one has by far the smallest geographic distribution. It's approximately 400 square kilometers.
And this is the animal's home and native land, one of only two small remote swamps in Cuba, which Bill and Cuban biologists are fighting to conserve. If the Cuban crocodile is to survive, the swamp needs kid glove treatment. The Cuban crocodile is a very distinctive animal. It grows up to 12 feet long, it's more heavily armored than most species, and you don't get too close because these little tootsies will propel its 150 pounds of flesh and teeth 5 feet up into the air. During the world's great ice ages, sea levels were lower and the Cuban crocodile had a much bigger habitat. But now their restricted range could easily be wiped out. And there's still illegal hunting to worry about. As a student, Bill had read one expert's view that the Cuban crocodile was already extinct, almost entirely as a result of hunting for their skins.
This is the end of section B.
Ora avete a disposizione un minuto per compilare il foglio per le risposte per quanto riguarda l'esercizio A.
Siamo alla conclusione della prova d'ascolto d'inglese. Smettete di scrivere, chiudete la prova d'esame e posatela sull'orlo del banco insieme al foglio per le risposte.
Ancora un cordiale saluto.